Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed, an effective educator and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
All right. Well, welcome to another Two Teas in a Pod podcast. And today we have our special guest, Erin Daly from Danbury, is going to be joining us. And we really just want to hit the ground with the important topic of, hey, what does it really look like to underfund a school district? And Erin, as we know, Danbury has been hit pretty hard in terms of the funding. And it's interesting in Danbury because it's not that there isn't money. It's how the district is really choosing to allocate, or the town rather. And so I think it's super important that we have a conversation about what is the real impact? What is the real cost? And so, you know, you're in the classroom, you're representing, Erin is our Danbury president. And so we are really happy that she's here to give us some insight.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure to be here and talk about such an important issue. As everyone, well, most everyone knows by now, because we've been screaming it from the rooftops for years now, Danbury is 169 out of 169 districts in Connecticut for the least funded per pupil spending in the state of Connecticut. So, you know, what does that mean? What does that look like in Danbury? And what does that say to everybody out there that's hearing this magic number that we've been kind of screaming about for years? Well, it looks like in Danbury, Danbury's a district that's continuing to grow, and our population has continued to zoom through the roof, and we have overcrowded classrooms. And we've been seeing this for the past 6 or 7 years when other districts have been seeing a decline in population in their towns.
Erin, how many elementary schools do you have? Just to kind of put this.
We have 13.
So 13
elementary schools.
Yeah. So that's a lot of kids.
and one of the largest high schools in the state. So, which is, you know, we've put additions on that several times, and we just can't make it any bigger. So we have these overcrowded schools and, you know, this underfunded budget every single year. And it's been a battle from the state vantage point and the city vantage point. The city administrators, the mayor, has not wanted to raise taxes in the past several years. And the state has said, we're giving you enough from the ECS formula. All of these are the buzzwords that people talk about in news articles. And here we are, the teachers, the boots on the ground, you know, kind of feeling the impact and seeing our students struggle without adding any additional increases. So, you know, we're lacking the quality resources that many other of our neighboring towns have for their students.
Sure.
We're lacking the curriculum programming. We're lacking the classroom libraries. We're lacking the essential tools to actually do our job effectively and to give the kids the things that everyone else in the surrounding towns has within their budgets.
So let's take that. Let's be real specific. So you're in a third grade classroom. So talk to me about what is in that classroom that had to be put there by you, I guess, is the best way to put that, right? What did you bring in that really, in maybe Jocelyn's district, home district, might have already been provided? So what are things that you would consider essential that you had to bring in?
So I would say, number one, books. You know, we want to put books in the hands of our students so they can have authentic text to read. So books are not provided there. And if they are, they're provided in very limited supply, where teams of teachers have to share multiple copies of the same book. So I'm mentoring two different teachers, brand new teachers in my building, and they were given $50 to start a classroom library.
Oh my gosh. That's like five
and
books.
And you know how far that gets us.
Right. That's not a lot of books. And I think sometimes we say, oh, you can donate books, but the importance of a classroom library having new and clean and shiny books, even kind of
and diverse
books that are, you know, windows and mirrors, so to speak, but even just the quality of how the book looks after 2 or 3 years of reading. You know, kids like to pick up books that look clean and new. Unfortunately, the well-loved books that have pages ripping out, you know, that's what ends up in some classrooms when they're underfunded, and it hurts a student's ability to want to pick up that book and actually read it. So the importance of having a strong, really well cultivated classroom library in all classrooms is important and costs a good deal of money.
Yeah, that is an expense for sure. And certainly $50 is really, I mean, those poor teachers, they are sitting there literally looking at 5 books going, okay. And again, you know, you're an underfunded district. So that also means your teachers don't have necessarily the resources, but they may not have the salaries to compete to support that as well. So they're kind of double whammied.
I think, you know, salaries, that is a huge point as well. And so what we're doing is we're tapping into our own salaries in order to put these resources back into the classroom, which really isn't fair for teachers to have to do that. Looking at our student population, we have a very diverse growing population. And, you know, when we look at things like books in a classroom, we want to make sure we have books that represent all of our different groups of kids so they can, when they're reading books, they can feel like they're reading about themselves and they can see themselves in the materials that are presented to them and the resources. Danbury doesn't have that. You know, we struggle. We're using outdated supplies and outdated resources and broken desks. And it's an equality issue. It really is a struggle to compare one student from one town to a student in Danbury and say that they have the same. It's just not the case. Basic things too. It's pens, it's pencils, it's writing materials, it's paper. It's limitations on, you know, how much you can copy, because teachers have to copy a lot of things, right? Because we don't have resources. So, you know, we've got limitations. So teachers are taking things to, you know, copy stores like Staples to copy books for students and to do things that are kind of unorthodox just to get the same resources in the hands of our students.
And what does a class size look like in a school in Danbury, in an elementary school, let's say?
So in an elementary school, you know, a class size is, this year we have, you know, spread people out due to COVID. And so our class sizes are running about between 20 and 25. But in a normal non-COVID year where we don't have as many teachers, we did hire a few short-term hires for this COVID, I guess temporary hires is what we'll call them. Yeah. But in a normal year, our class sizes are between 24 to 27.
Yeah, those are, and what people really have a hard time understanding is that the difference between 20 and 25 even is dramatic, and that what a teacher can do.
It's funny you bring that up, because one of the huge issues this year has been kindergarten for Danbury. When you have, you know, 25 little kindergartners who haven't been in school yet and have only known, you know, pandemic kind of life, and Danbury doesn't have the funding to have support staff in those classrooms. It's one teacher with no tutor, with no para, and no support. And, you know, teaching is very challenging under those
Holy
circumstances.
Cow. So I think we need to get some, you know, legislators or somebody who wants to sit in a room with 25 5-year-olds. I mean, I got to tell you, you just described an experience that I wouldn't even know where to begin.
You just know? To get ready for lunch and wash hands is an experience.
I think I was going to say that might be my whole day. Be like, okay, guys. You know, as a high school teacher, that's not my skill set, but God bless them.
And I think that's where we see it. And we see it, you know, kind of like at this bare basic kind of level, which a lot of people can't visualize unless you're actually in the classroom. So, you know, that's something we're always saying to our board members and to the community members. If you could see, and of course this year is challenging because we don't have visitors coming in as often, but if you could see the struggles and what teachers are working with, how little they're working with, and how little students have, how little things, resources and materials they have. Danbury's been known for buying free programming. So we buy a reading program that's free for 2 years. And then, you know, in year three, the company will say, okay, now it costs this amount of dollars. So we scrap it. So we do that all the time. And so we're continually transitioning into new different materials right. and new curriculum. And that, you know, is not a fair, it's an equity issue for our students.
I was just going to say, you never get to become experts. You're in a constant state of learning, which is really, really difficult. And I'm going to put Jocelyn on the hot seat for a second, because she has a different experience in a slightly more resourced district. So help anybody listening, Jocelyn, what would be a stark difference from what Erin has explained and what you have experienced?
Well, I mean, I would just say to start, a kindergarten class size is about 20 kids. And when we have it over 20, there's all sorts of Board of Ed conversation about how we make this classroom different. The parents come on, they speak to it, and they get that class split so that we have the smaller class sizes. You know, we have books, we get allotments of books all the time for brand new books in our libraries. And when we get our reading curriculum's been in place for probably almost a decade, where we've had time and training and PD to have that support. And not only did the teachers become experts, but the consistency in a good program for students to have, you know, from kindergarten all the way thoroughly through till, you know, fifth or sixth grade, really makes a difference in terms of the care that a student can have and the attention you can give to progress and understanding where students fall and what interventions you can put in place. And our paraprofessional staff, we have paraprofessionals. I think that in general, school districts have shied away from academic, just general classroom para support, mm-hmm. but we do have our special education para support in strength. But I do believe any kindergarten class should have an academic paraprofessional just for that extra hand on deck, because we talk about SEL, we talk about that care. And I think, you know, for a teacher in Danbury, they have just less support, and that's not necessarily fair or equitable, because then they can't provide that care for students.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think it's really important for people to know that the educators in Danbury want to do as much for their kids as anyone else.
And probably do.
I would imagine, you know, in fairness, I think that you are making up the gap, right? You are trying to fill in the space to as much as you possibly can, but there's nothing you can do if you have five more kids than a neighboring town. And there's nothing you can do if they're changing the curriculum every 2 years. So I think the impact of those things is really profound. I think it's important for us to always be talking about that, because I don't think that we can underscore how important consistency and those connections and the feeling of value, right, that we really want our students to have, that we invest in you, we believe in you, we think you are worth new books, we think you are worth journals. You know, there's a lot of emphasis on writing, and, you know, a kid who gets a journal to write in is going to feel like they have something special, versus the kid who has a bunch of paper stapled together that the teacher is doing everything they can to like put some construction paper and make it look special, you know?
Right.
So I guess the question is, right, investing in schools is a town effort. It's a community effort, and it's a choice. And I think what I think, and especially in a district that has some funds and chooses to allocate it someplace else. So I guess the question is, how do we support a school district like Danbury, who has, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say that they have the same supports and funding that a town like Darien has, but there is money there. So how do we get it so that it's put to the schools as opposed to, you know, other projects? Because clearly our schools are an investment that towns can rely on. Real estate matters when it comes to schools. Just bringing in
new, we are an asset,
you know, new people to the town. You know, what do you think, Erin?
Yeah, and I that's a complex question here in Danbury as well. And, you know, we have invested a lot of research and planning to build our new career academy, which will be an innovative school for Danbury. And we're really excited about that. You know, reusing a building that has kind of been outdated and kind of reloving this building and turning it into a school is a really exciting project that we're all super excited about. Then there are those that think that bringing a charter school into Danbury would be a solution to our overcrowding and underfunding. And, you know, what we say to that is that comes with a cost. And, you know, a charter school takes from our already underfunded budget. You know, with a charter school, we have to pay for the busing, the special education services, the lunch services. That all comes out of our already tightly underfunded budget. And so we don't feel like a charter school is the answer. We feel like adding additional funding to our budget and investing in the schools that we have and investing in the students that are already here and making sure that they have what they need is the best course of action for us here in Danbury.
Yeah, it seems like you have staff that want to do all the right things. So let's give them the opportunity to do it. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're just looking for those tools. I mean, you know, we have so many multiple language learners that just need the tools given to them and the resources given to them. There's been a lot of talk about building, you know, a charter school that would be for one specific segment of the population.
Sure.
That's not an answer. We want to make sure all of our students have all of the same resources and have all of the same opportunities that all of our community members in neighboring towns and throughout Connecticut have.
Absolutely. I mean, education in its purest form, right? Public education is a great equalizer, and that's its intention, that's its approach. But we need to have the resources to make that an actuality. Erin, I want to thank you for joining us today. I hope that we're able to bring some light. We'll hopefully bring this to some legislators. And as we mentioned, we'd welcome anyone who wants to substitute teach on any given moment. We certainly could use their bodies in a classroom. And we have
kindergarten especially.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And we have an almost effective N95 available to them if they'd like it. So thank you, Erin. I appreciate you joining us. I also want to remind everyone who's listening that we have started a CEA Daily. You can subscribe to that and receive all of the latest information. It's going to come out, as it indicates, daily. You can get that at cea.org/daily. So we would encourage people to sign up for that. You'll learn a little bit. Our podcast will probably be promoted through there, as will any of the other upcoming events at CEA.
Especially, this is a busy time of year. Our legislative session is short, but coming up, and we have a
Absolutely.
Lot of important things to address and hoping for our teacher support and our support of our communities.
Absolutely. And as Erin has mentioned, there's nothing more important than supporting our educators and their hard work. So thank you, Erin, and we will see you again here probably soon, folks.
Take care.
Thanks, Kate and Jocelyn.
We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at cea.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word, because we are
stronger together.